This episode of The Bladder Presents is brought to you, in part, by Patreon supporters. Thanks, everyone. If you'd like bonus book reviews, wool gathering after show episodes, and more, head to patreon.com/bladderpresents. And now, on with the episode.
How are you killing Billy?
How did he kill Howard?
Cut.
He strangled him.
What? Hurry up! Film this!
Oh my
Film this!
God.
Well, I don't know about y'all, but we're gonna kill Billy by punching down on a ghost hunter show in a way that's probably beneath us, but we do have some sincere questions about shows like Ghost Adventures, Serial Killer Spirits. Like, who are they for? What do they say about what people, quote, need from true crime stories? And do those instruments do anything? First, though, we're going to talk about Lacey Mosley's new all-con pod, Scam Goddess, what it shares with My Favorite Murder, and whether we'll ever get sick of delving into the Anna Sorokin case. This is no place for a childlike lifestyle. It's The Bladder Presents, episode 115. Welcome back to The Bladder Presents, a podcast that reviews true crime to find the stuff that's worth your time. Somehow making time for this instead of taking a well-deserved nap is Stephanie Early Green. Stephanie, I'm thrilled that you're back. Hello.
Thanks for having me. Hi.
I don't think this episode is going to be very long.
No, I don't either.
But let's get into our... It's also going to really stretch the definition of most wanted, but let's get into the first most wanted segment. The new podcast, Scam Goddess, here is the case file from the Earwolf landing page. Scam Goddess is a podcast dedicated to fraud and all those who practice it. Each week, host Lacey Mosley, aka Scam Goddess, keeps listeners up to date on current rackets, digs deep into the latest scams, and breaks down historic hoodwinks alongside some of your favorite comedians. It's like true crime, only without all the death. True fun crime. Exclamation point, end quote. So that's comedian Lacey Mosley of Florida Girls and Insecure. She's the goddess in question. Each week she'll take on a new set of scams with a different guest. The inaugural episode brought Paul F. Tompkins to the table to discuss the infamous Anna Sorokin, aka Anna Delvey, who rooked various hotels, restaurants, banks, and Vanity Fair editresses out of a total of $250,000 a couple years back. Okay, so Scam Goddess, it's your basic, you know, comedians talking podcast about true crime. Did you have any overall thoughts, feelings?
You know, I don't have a lot to say about this, to be quite honest. Like, So when I saw Paul F. Tompkins was the guest, I was like, oh, great, because I really like Paul F. Tompkins. He's like the perennial like comedy podcast guest, you know?
Yeah, he is.
Like, he's such a good sport, and I think probably to a fault. Like, I feel like he never says no.
Yeah.
Any comedian who asked him to be on their podcast, he's like, sure. He must do like 15 podcasts a week or something. But I think that it might be an issue with this one because he literally had never heard of this case. So did not have a lot to add other than just being like a good natured, you know, he'll talk about it and make jokes, but he doesn't actually know what he's talking about. So I don't know how much he added to the discussion. And honestly, I'm not sure how much Lacey Mosley brought to the discussion.
Well,
so
yeah.
I listened to it and I was just like, I didn't get a whole lot out of it. I never laughed out loud. I smiled a couple times, but like, I didn't hate it, but I don't really know what it's for, I guess. Those are my overall thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, I also smiled and chuckled a couple of times. I was listening to this while my car was being worked on, which was sure to be expensive and annoying. So I was definitely in the mood to be distracted with some hilarity. I mean, and there's kind of two things. First of all, it's a comedy crime podcast. So either that's for you or it isn't.
Right.
It doesn't tend to be for me, not because I feel like it's disrespectful to the material, but just because we're at peak crime podcast. I don't have a lot of time to listen to podcasts, and I want information and not jokes. Like, this is why I stopped listening to My Favorite Murder, not because I thought it was too flip, but because it was too long. So
yeah,
there's that. But some people want that, genre, want that setup with their true crime. It's totally fine. I don't understand how Paul F. Tompkins had managed not to hear about the Anna Delvey case. That seems almost impossible unless he was on the International Space Station last year. And even then is A.
Yeah.
B, as I said, I don't have any ethical kick with bagging on people in a crime story or getting laughs out of it. But if you actually are getting shit wrong, then it's not funny.
Yeah.
And they got some shit wrong, which was disappointing. It's one thing if Paul F. Tompkins never heard of it and like is just sort of riffing, that's fine. But if you're hosting this thing and the whole thing is about scams, you need to not be doing a whole run of jokes and callbacks that's based on incorrect information. I was initially encouraged because Paul F. Tompkins said that he had that old Jay Nash compendium of crooks called Blood Letters and Bad Men, which that's like five people in America whose parents had that. So I was initially encouraged to hear that, as you hear in clip two.
Well, what's your relationship with scams?
I have always been, I've always found it fascinating, like old school swindles have always been, when I was a kid, I had a book called, it was a series of books called Blood Letters and Bad Men. And it was a history of a crime in America.
That sounds old.
From like the colonies to, at that point, the 70s. Okay. And a lot of the stuff, it was, you know, some of the stuff is really grim. Mm-hmm. Some of the stuff was just weird.
Some of it was like slavery. The biggest scam. The biggest scam.
I don't know that they covered slavery.
They thought it was a cruise ship. But really.
But the things that, the things about like dudes that did, you know, the original pyramid schemes, you know, Carlos Ponzi and stuff like that. And guys that just like were, you know, town to town grifters was always fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Total same. The same author has a book called Cons and Con Men, and it's just, it's like 700 Victorian flim flammers who basically went from town to town selling patent medicines that were like some eucalyptus leaves and cocaine, and awesome, made a ton of money and eventually were killed by someone's cuckolded husband. I mean, sure, it's a great bathroom book. I recommend it, and I will put a link in the show notes.
Sweet.
So I was encouraged by that, that it's like, okay, these are my people, that they also sat around reading their parents' copy of Blood Letters and Bad Men. And he, I liked that he was sort of into, they had a little discussion about cons in the age of social media versus in the Victorian era, where you really could just like get on a train and leave town. And it's not like they're going to call ahead or look on your Insta. They can't. And I liked the discussion about like the practical pros and cons of cons, as we hear in clip three.
The work you have to do. This is what always fascinates me about the scammers, is that the work that you have to do this, it's so involved. Like, I get that. I guess it's easier than having a job.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, this is a job.
Yeah. It's easier than having to go to another place and be on their schedule.
Yeah, you can do, you can scam from home on your own schedule.
But I mean, it's
make your own hours.
It's just, see, for me, I guess because I'm not math oriented, it seems like a lot of work.
You're like, you have to keep up with so many fake account numbers.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, this is sort of a good exemplar of my of why I'm probably not going to keep listening to this podcast. Like, his sort of jokes about that sounded a little prepped, but at the same time, like, this is a good point. This is a job. Like, a, you know, if you do big store cons, that is your job. And there are like little jobs within that. And I just was hoping for a little bit more of a substantive discussion of what makes these things interesting. But maybe that's my fault for expecting that from a podcast like this. So,
yeah. And it's like, I think they're just going for jokes. So like, they'll keep following a riff rather than delving into substantively to the con itself, I think.
Right. Which is fine. And there are moments when, like the clip that I'm about to play, there's, you know, she's like making jokes about millennials and avocados, which har, I guess. But then she makes this one comment about a claim of Anna Delvey's that seems to sincerely delight Paul F. Tompkins. Here's clip four.
And this includes persuading a bank employee to give her a $100,000 loan that she never intended to pay back. They talk about how millennials can't get houses.
Yeah.
We can't get loans for a home. And you got $100,000.
Drinking too much coffee.
An avocado. Avocado is ruining us. I'm a slave to big avocado. I'm snorting it. I have a problem.
I smear it on the walls.
So they're right about me. They're absolutely right. So she says that she intended to pay back her creditors.
I think I might just make that like a ringtone. Pay back her creditors. It was very charming.
Yeah. He's great.
He is great. And she, like, her delivery, her extremely skeptical delivery at times is really perfect for this. Like, again, if you like, you know, comedy discussion podcasts, I think this will be, I think this is right in your, right up your alley. It's well done. It is only an hour. But here's where the well actually-ing begins, unfortunately. I'm going to play clip five, and then I'm going to ask you what you think about their take on wire transfers. who okay. has more fun than we do on the Potter Presents, I ask you. Here's clip five.
And the thing that I thought that was interesting about this was, is so she was promising these boutique hotels that she was going to wire transfer. Mm-hmm. Wire transfer seems to be something that comes up in scams so often. Mm-hmm. Is this a way that people pay people?
You know, my only experience with it, and I wired somebody money one time.
Paul is rich.
Did that strike you at all?
I think it didn't at the time, but I think they're confusing like Western Union, like where you have to go and fill out a thing at CBS with transferring money through a bank, which is also a wire transfer. Like,
yeah.
And it's pretty standard. Like, that's how, like, I pay, you know, like, for example, that's how we pay our nanny. It's not that hard. You just need two bank accounts. Like, so I think they're confusing two things, right? Like an emergency like transfer of funds versus like just transferring money from one bank account to another.
Yeah. And there's the fact that this riff goes on for a while about wire transfers and the wire transfers being like kind of fancy thing. I feel like it's actually more being an adult who has sold businesses and homes thing.
Yeah.
Yep. Which is not everyone, and that's totally fine. But I was kind of like, the issue with not knowing that is not that they didn't know it. It's that it's at the heart of the scam.
Right.
That she was trying, you know, here's a little background on wire transfers. Servicey, they're supposed to hit your account, like, instantaneously. That's the point of them. It's a federalized system that is supposed to safely transfer large sums of money from bank account to bank account. The fact that Anna Sorokin was like, oh, well, there must have been a number transposed, or I don't know why they're holding the funds with an intermediary. Like, this can work with a Mark who has no experience with wire transfers, but it is at the heart of the scam that if you have ever dealt with wire transfers before, you know that that's not how they work.
Right.
Like, the wire request is put in and then the money moves. That's it. There's no it's not like physically moving like with pneumatic tubes. It's right away. So that was a little bit distracting to me, that it's like, this would be a lot funnier if A, you weren't conflating Western Union and the federal wire system, and B, if you knew that this was at the heart of the whole story.
Right. Like, it just shows they didn't really understand how her scam was working.
Yeah. Or not working. Mm-hmm. And again, in the last clip, like, I don't expect everyone to have read Rachel Deloach Williams's full-length book account of the Vanity Fair article that she wrote about her role as one of the Marks. But they have an extended sequence where they're making fun of her as just this, like, airhead, privileged, just like shithead who deserved what she got. And it's like factually inaccurate throughout. I mean, granted, the book has a little bit of that Vanity Fairy, you know, and here's what everyone was wearing. And then we went to get this kind of pedicure, and you're like, this could have been a pamphlet. I'm not really sure we needed this whole book. But Williams was not... Their premise is like, oh, boo-hoo, you got taken for this bill that you could cover. Like, actually, she couldn't cover it. She had to put it on a corporate card, and she really got screwed.
Yeah.
With this. So here's the last clip from this section.
This woman, Miss Williams, testifies at the trial. She's crying. And she says she wishes she had never met Anna.
Yeah,
she
kidding.
She said, this is the most, this killed me. This is the most traumatic thing I've ever been through. Girl, if the most traumatic thing you've ever been through is that you went on a vacation in Morocco and had to foot a $62,000 bill that you could foot.
Exactly. Exactly.
I haven't never experienced anything.
Yeah, you're not like selling, you know, antique candlesticks that have been in the family for generations. Like, if you can afford to get scammed out of $62,000, you're fine.
And that's the worst moment in your life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The
yeah.
worst moment in my life was I put down my card at the hotel.
I mean, look, should we be comparing Rachel Deloach Williams's dilemma with people who spend 2.5 years in Rikers because their families couldn't come up with $800 bail? No, there is definitely relative privilege here, but like, that's not factually correct.
But suffering is suffering. I mean, like, why does it have to be compared to anything?
Yeah.
This is what happened in the story, and it did hurt her. It did hurt this person. So like, I don't know why they're diminishing it, you know?
Well, and yeah, there's other sort of things where they're like, so, you know, is Anna Sorokin doing an accent? And then, you know, yes, she's doing an accent. She's doing a German accent. Like,
she's German, right?
I mean, she's Russian.
Oh, she's Russian.
So she wasn't doing an accent. She just has an accent.
Right.
So my issue is not making fun of this stuff. It's like, it's... If you know that the whole basis of a 7-minute run of jokes is wrong. Yeah. So I don't know, like, I wanted this to be better, like more rooted in good information than it was, because I think structurally she's onto something. Like, she already sold ads on it. I love talking and listening to other people talk about cons and frauds, but if it's going to be this every week where you didn't even look at the Wikipedia, I don't know.
You have to wonder how she did her research, you know?
Yeah.
If at all.
Like, had you not heard of Anna Sorokin? Because this is like, there's two primary sources on this that literally everybody read. So yeah. I just am not sure about that. Do you think you're gonna keep making time for this, or would it depend on the scam, or you're out?
No, I'm good. So going back to the My Favorite Murder thing, I listened to that for a while, and then I got super frustrated with it because, kind of for the same reason, they do not do research, and they're sort of proud of it, and they get tons of stuff wrong. And I just don't find either of them that funny, and I think one of them in particular thought she was just like precious, and it bothered me. So I stopped listening to that a while ago because of the factual inaccuracies. So I don't know if they got better about that as time went on, but it bothers me too. So I don't want to deal with another iteration of that, but with cons.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't have a whole lot else to say, and I don't want to pile on this podcast because I do feel like, as you said before, I don't think the point of podcasts in this subgenre is to be accurate. I think it's to find the jokes and make the jokes.
Right.
For me personally, if I do know a case and they are just like riffing on stuff that I like can't get to the giggling because I'm like, well, but she's not doing an accent, or but that's not how that works, then that's not going to be for me. Right. Listeners, if you have consumed this one or you think that I should give it another try with an upcoming episode, it's at Blotter Presents on every iteration of social media pretty much, so let me know. Okay, so here's one that I will not be sampling again, ever in my life. Ghost Adventures, Serial Killer Spirits. This is a Travel Channel program that I didn't know existed, and I think called it various other ghost hunting show names in our rundown doc for like 2 weeks before we recorded this. And I'm like, oh wait, it's not Ghost Hunters.
Or Paranormal Investigators.
Yeah. Or Ghostly Whatever, or like the, you know, whatever medium shows. Like I was shocked at just how many of these shows there are. I actually used to cover one for, I think, Sci-Fi that was about Bayou Ghost Hunters or something. Mm-hmm. They just are like mushrooms, these shows. This one, not counting its like special season lets, like this one, regular seasons of this show, there are like 19 seasons.
That's crazy.
There are no ghosts left. You're done. You're good. In case you're not familiar with this, which you may not be, here's the case file from Wikipedia. I do get the feeling that they wrote it. Quote, paranormal investigator Zach Bagans leads his team of co-investigators Nick Groff and Aaron Goodwin at haunted locations both in America and abroad, interviewing locals about alleged hauntings before going face-to-face with supernatural entities. Each hour-long episode, and P.S., there's like 21 minutes of material, if that, follows Bagans, Groff, and Goodwin as they work to uncover the paranormal mysteries, and after piecing together the haunted history of each site, the team holds a dusk-to-dawn lockdown in an effort to obtain physical evidence of the paranormal and discover the truth. End quote.
I feel like they should be legally obligated to put the word evidence in quotation marks every time they use it, but that's just me.
Oh my God. I'm not even sure where to start. So this special season, and we decided to do this because we were talking about what to do for the cold case segment of the podcast, and I happened to get a PR email about this, and I was like, this looks dumb and fun. You have a newborn and limited attention to give this. Let's do this.
Yeah.
Thinking that it would be like at least amusingly bad, but it was kind of like aggressively, depressingly bad. But maybe this type of show, it's fine.
Yeah.
Do you ever watch this kind of thing, like even as a joke or not really?
I, you know, in the past, I have watched Paranormal State. That the one with the Penn State guy?
Yes, I think so. I actually watched their episode on the Queen Mary and it freaked me right out. And then I was like, I'm never watching a show like this again because that's as scary as it's going to get.
It is. I used to think it was kind of watchable. I'll admit that. But the other ones, no, I haven't watched any of the other ones. So, but I'm, you know, you watch one of these things and you pretty much are familiar with the genre.
For sure.
And I guess within the genre, there are levels of stupid. And this one, I have to guess, is the stupidest. I mean, it was, I was expecting it to be stupid, but it was beyond. So,
it really is. They are investigating serial killer spirits. It's right there in the tin. It's a 4-episode mini season where they're covering, this episode was H.H. Holmes, John Wayne Gacy, someone named Bird, who I had not heard of, and Bundy, because, of course, a hard pass.
Yeah.
This, I mean, H.H. Holmes, we're talking about this, Toby Ball and I, a little bit on the after show for last week's episode, that it's maybe just not possible to do another take on H.H. Holmes because his set of crimes was so over the top that you think it's made up is A, and B, The Devil in the White City already did the most straightforward, like, unflamboyant accounting possible, and everyone else just needs to stand down on right. the story. But when they actually have to, on Ghost Adventures, talk about the actual criminal whose spirit they allege is lurking around this house, first of all, they switch to a sound, like a track of sound that sounds like he was in a can, and he's like just reading this script, and he sounds even more kind of fakey and unprepared than usual, which is very. Here's clip 7.
H.H. Holmes is considered to be America's first serial killer. In 1882, his taste for blood was cultivated in medical school, where he gained access to cadavers for dissection. His indifference towards life led him to construct an apartment building just outside of Chicago, designed specifically to conceal the murders of countless victims. This came to be known as the Murder Castle. The complex included soundproof rooms where lethal doses of gas would asphyxiate victims. Chutes with trap doors were installed so bodies could be dropped to the basement without detection. The flesh of his victims was removed in acid vats, and the bones mounted so skeletons could be sold to medical schools.
Okay, relative skill of this informational break aside, Stephanie, you had never heard of H.H. Holmes, so would you say that this overview that they give is adequate? Do you feel you're up to speed?
I had heard of H.H. Holmes, but I didn't know anything about H.H. Holmes, so just to give myself a little bit more credit. But yeah, I, like, you know, no, it's bad. Like, I don't know how a literal murder castle escaped my notice up until this point in my life, but I said to Al, my husband, I was like, oh, I have to watch this thing about H.H. Holmes. And he's like, oh, the murder castle guy. And I was like, you know about this? Al doesn't know anything. And so, I mean, no offense, Al. And he knew about it and I didn't. So, yeah, that's on me. But, yeah, I mean, I went on the Wikipedia before I watched the show because I was curious. So I feel like it was an extremely bare bones accounting of his crimes. And then the confusing thing was, so the murder castle or hotel or whatever it was doesn't exist anymore. So then they show up at this, and I'm quoting here, very haunted cottage where they're claiming H.H. Holmes and his 8-year-old victim are still in residence. And then they wait until like 20 minutes into the show to explain the connection, like why, what happened there, what, how it relates to H.H. Holmes. I still don't know how H.H. Holmes gained access to this child he murdered, who owned the cottage at the time. Like, they don't explain any of that. So yeah, shoddy explaining of background, I'd say.
Well, and the attempts on the Travel Channel's website in the like photo carousel for this episode to make this cottage look extremely scary with like very obvious day for night photography.
Yeah.
That, and then there's this like little tiny rocking chair on the porch. Like, y'all brought that. Come on. So H.H. Holmes H.H. Holmes is a fascinating case, not just because of the murder castle, but because the construction of the murder castle was itself an elaborate con that he got contractors to basically build him this bizarro Winchester house for free by starting them on the job, telling them they were fucking it up, firing them, and then refusing to pay them. So on top of being a serial killer, he's also a con man. But this is not happening. This is not about the murder castle. This is not a victim who was at the murder castle. This is one of his other alleged victims from before he moved to Chicago. And they have his great-grandson or his great-great-grandson like standing on the property being like, so you feel something scary here, right? He's like, yes, I feel something scary. And then he goes to deposit his check.
Yeah. And I had my notes that great-great-grandson is like clearly doing whatever it takes to cash in on his ancestors, like evilness, you know?
We way back in the day on like episode 5 or something like that covered a Netflix documentary about H.H. Holmes that was so bad that neither Toby nor I could even finish it. And he was all over that. He's been reboot of In Search Of. His facial hair comes and goes, but Mudgett is always there. And then I guess we have to talk about Samantha Starbright.
Oh boy.
The current resident. I don't know if she owns the cottage. Samantha Starbright, this will be in the visual aids. Again, those are on Blotter Presents social media. She's first shown, she has her hair is like in, she's probably 40. Her hair is in little girl, like Cindy Brady pigtails with little bows on them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure she had like little freckles drawn on with eyeliner. There's a lot of B-roll of her house and like what appears to be a changing room and her bedroom where her bed is like a giant crib.
Yeah. I didn't want to delve into why she had so many diapers in her house.
I mean, I think that this is a thing and I don't judge her, but the fact that this is the overlap with the ghost adventure. I mean, all right, let's hear a little bit about the euphemistic take on her lifestyle in clip 8.
Samantha Starbright, who finds comfort in a childlike lifestyle, has lived here for 5 years.
Is it true that you think that there is something sinister here?
Yeah, I definitely think there's some kind of activity here. Something's going on.
Do you think that because Howard Peitzel, he was young, you know what I mean? And he was murdered in this house.
Yeah.
Do you think that you're vulnerable for something dark?
I mean, how many dozens of seasons of this has the guy done that he still can't find a way to ask the actual question? Which is, since you are deliberately still in your childhood lane, do you think that you're a conduit for this child's spirit?
Yeah.
I don't believe that that's true, but there has to be some reason that we're seeing this particular, like, I'm not even sure I believe that she lives there.
It's confusing.
And it could have gone somewhere interesting, I think, if deeply sad and probably cynically manufactured, that if she was the one who contacted the show and said, I think this child's spirit is still here and it's speaking to me, like, is that Bogue? Probably. But there is something interesting there about her and about whether we think children are more open to communicating with people beyond the veil or whatever. Like, I don't know if you happen to believe in ghosts. I do, but we're never going to see them on TV. I don't know. Like, there was something interesting to be done there, and this show is not capable of doing it.
No.
And also, she has really a lot of diapers in her house.
Like, a lot.
For someone who's old enough to run for president, that's just too many fucking diapers, I feel.
I have a newborn, and she has more diapers in her house than I do. It was a lot.
Yeah, that's too many. It's too many. Oh my
yeah.
God. I'm just imagining you watching this and counting and being like, that's four boxes. That's what? Like, what is she doing? Yeah,
I know. It was. So do we think she sleeps in that crib? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
Because she was talking, she has one segment where she's talking about how she woke up with some marks on her that were unexplained that I guess some poltergeist gave her while she was sleeping. And I'm like, or it's because you were sleeping on a huge pile of stuffed animals and one of them was digging into your arm and left a, or it was like the bars of the crib. Like, there are a lot of ways to get bruises in this scenario that all involve you needing a big girl bed.
Yeah.
She's not hurting anyone. It was just like, to have this happening and really not be given any context.
Well, the ghost adventurers are very credulous, let's say, when it comes to any kind of, I'm going to put this in quotes again, evidence that ghosts exist and are haunting someone. So like, she's like, I woke up with a mark. They're like, there it is. There's the evidence, you know? And they do that throughout the show, pointing to various things as evidence of paranormal activity, when in fact, like, most of it / all of it could be explained some other way, but they don't bother to look into those other ways.
They do debunk a couple of things, I think, just to get out in front of the accusation that they're credulous about everything. They're like, oh, that moving light was actually just our lights coming through the keyhole. Like,
right. Nice, yeah. That's
nice
true.
Try debunking your own shit. But then the recordings that they have where they're like, well, that's obviously H.H. Holmes and it's just a computery sounding voice saying, I hate.
Well, and my question was, if the spirit that they're contacting can speak in partial sentences in English, why can't it speak in full sentences? Like, you know?
Yeah.
And they never try to explain that.
I'm sure there's a rationale for that involving frequencies, but I don't know what it is, and I'm not interested in hearing it because it's bullshit.
Yeah, I'm asking the question, but I don't actually want the answer.
Yeah,
and then
they
I think you were going to talk about this, but the technology they use is like hilariously unconvincing. Like, I mean, they have like basically a talk to type thing where they ask it a question, then it answers in like one or two words. But like, they don't explain how this is supposed to be influenced by, like, maybe you have to watch this show a lot to understand how the technology supposedly works.
I had a lot of questions about the talk to text.
But it doesn't, like, it's just a thing. Like, it does, there's no even attempt to explain how this would prove the existence of ghosts and why they're not just operating it, you know?
Yeah. And then, like, the nouns that it picks out, it just seemed like it was hooked up to a, what are those things called? Like a speak and spell?
Yes.
That's like, this seems pretty random.
It was really random. But they reacted like the ghost was telling them very specific and targeted information every time they'd shriek and gasp. And I mean, the reactions were really big on their part.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, this is their job and they're doing it. They are acting. And some of these shows, I used to do a series on previously.tv about not celebrity psychics, but whatever, that woman whose name was Kim, and she would accompany quote celebrities. We're talking like Elizabeth Rome or like third engineer from the left in Apollo 13 kind of person. Actually, Ileana Douglas was on it. Like, occasionally they would get someone that you're like, okay, that's legit. Yeah. And they would go back to their childhood homes and talk to them about the feelings that she was getting. And I just had a whole chart that's like, how is this cold read working? And that was interesting to me because it's like, I don't believe in this, but I respect the process and that she's making a living doing this thing that
that's a skill. Know,
yeah. That it's like, okay, well, usually you're going to say that you see the letter M, but every now and then you got to switch it up and go with a V or an X. so that people don't think that you're bullshit. And it's like, well, a body of water, and then you have to get really specific and you have to start guessing family members. Like, I am fascinated by that. I don't know if it's a con, if the Marks are like willing participants in
they want to believe, you know.
Yeah,
like, do you ever watch Long Island Medium?
I don't, but I think it's her.
Oh, it's that lady.
I think so. Is her name? She's blonde, and her name's Kim.
And she has really long nails.
Yeah, yeah, that's her.
Yeah, that's her.
Yeah, she had like a sideline that was like
it's the same
celebrity
lady.
Ghost okay, encounters or something
she's
like that.
Quite. Yeah, she's really good at it. Like, there's a reason she's famous, but yeah, I mean, you can see how she's doing it, even though she's good at it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And one of the entries that in my little chart was like, is this something that someone could have found by going on the Department of Buildings website in the town that they're in?
Yeah.
You know, yes or no. So that was really fun. But this is like, I mean, they take it so seriously. Like, I, again, respect the effort that they're putting in. But because we're not regular watchers of the show, this is even more unmoored from real evidence and, you know, reality.
Right.
Than it normally would be. And the patter, again, he's giving it 110%, but he's not great off the cuff, old Zach. In clip 9.
My whole body has gone cold as ice.
Feel this leg on the top of it.
It's ice cold.
It's ice cold. I am ice cold, like, frozen. Like some superhero blew that ice on me and just turned me into an ice sculpture. I cannot move. And I had rage, and that is evidence.
And I have rage, and that is evidence. There's another ringtone. This episode's full of them.
I have in my notes, "It's giving me rage" is my new catchphrase. He kept saying, "It's giving me rage." And, you know, I feel like that several times a day. So,
I feel like that a couple of times watching this episode. I'm like, yeah, I'm getting rage.
Yeah. It was very silly.
Yeah. I, did not expect any better, and I won't pretend that I did, and I'm not going to pile onto this any further or tisk it. I will say that I think that there are possibly psychical ripples from events like this happening in a given place, or like certain properties that are just like burnt forever. I'm still not really happy that they put up another tower at Ground Zero.
Yeah.
It's only been, you know, 10 years since they finished it. I'm like, I don't know, you guys. So I think that's an interesting, thing to explore. And I think that shows like this kind of, try to get their arms around people's discomfort with the fact that in just about every square foot of, like, a, you know, incorporated city, something bad probably happened on it at some point.
Sure.
But this show is not really interested in or equipped to, so to speak, get into those larger conversations about why we consume true crime and ghost stories as perhaps a way of controlling those things that are scary and seem chaotic and random.
Yeah, it definitely skims over that. Like, at one point, I don't know who the guy was, but they had some guy on there who was saying, like, the neighbors won't come out at night. Like, no one will, like,
yeah,
you know? And I'm like, well, I'd like to hear more about that. Can we talk to some of the neighbors?
Yeah,
you know?
I feel like maybe this is you live in a possibly economically depressed suburb of a Rust Belt city issue versus the H.H. Holmes is on neighborhood watch and the shit it ain't good issue.
Yeah.
Which is how it was couched. And then they cut away from him before he could be like, yeah, like, there's gangs. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
But, and then he also said people don't work in their yards at night. And I'm like, but why would they?
No.
You can't see. It's dark.
Yeah. Like, I live on a, it's like the safest block, like Fort Brooklyn, it's Mayberry. There's a shit ton of retired cops. You could do pretty much anything you wanted in your yard at night, but it's dark, so yeah, you don't.
You're not doing a lot of weeding at midnight.
No.
I just still wish they had explained more, and this will be the last thing I complain about, but like, I really want to know how he got access to this child and who was this kid, and, you know, could they have not delved into that a bit in the hour that they had to explore this?
And this is not the only, like, this is not the only, there's one sort of back east where Mudgett, as he was originally known, and, you know, that was his name at birth, where he's from, like in New Hampshire. There's a couple of sort of like murder house stops on his way to becoming who he really was with the murder castle, where he allegedly killed kids. Like, why did we pick this one?
Yeah.
And if it was because this woman has legally changed her name to Starbright.
Capital S, capital B.
Yeah. Like, can we, I don't know. I'm asking too much of the show, so I'll stop. But yeah, again, if you're interested in seeing this for yourself or in picking it up at the John Wayne Gacy episode, which is sure to be just seething with class.
I'm sure they'll handle it very sensitively.
Yes, I think so. Big Clown, I'm sure, was asked to participate in this. That airs Saturdays on the Travel Channel, and it is Ghost Adventures, Serial Killer Spirits. Let's raise our spirits by talking about something else. You've got a couple of other things on your plate that are diaper related, Stephanie, but is there anywhere else that listeners can find you and your works?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, right now I'm not doing much, other than taking care of three children,
keeping a few humans alive. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bag of tails.
My blog is stephanieearlygreen.com, and I've updated it in the last couple of months with some publications. I had a story in the Chicago Tribune in August, so that is the biggest thing that's happened to me in the last couple of months, except for the birth of my child. So, you can check that out. Otherwise, I'm just,
it's a good story. We'll link it in the show notes.
Thank you. Otherwise, I'm just not doing much writing or otherwise.
Well, I'm going to let you get back to that because a nap might break out and you earned it, especially after this nonsense, honestly. Anyway, thank you for coming back.
Of course.
And I'll try to pick good stuff next time.
Yeah. Well, even if you don't.
Yeah. Speaking of good stuff next time, Paul Holes has an Oxygen true crime show as basically required by law. I'll be talking about it with Mike Dunn. We'll also be talking about the Sundance Channel Preppy Murder miniseries in November and a whole bunch of other stuff in the meantime. But until then, if you've got a tip for the Blotter Presents, you can find me on social media. That's Blotter Presents on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And at Eve Beatty's and my True Crime Review newsletter, Best Evidence. 2,000 paid subscribers by next August, and we will cover the Theranos trial in person. You can subscribe there at bestevidence.fyi. If you like the podcast, please tell a friend and rate it on iTunes so other listeners can find us. My guest has been Stephanie Early Green, and she's on Twitter at Ateffi. I am Sarah D. Bunting, and I confidentially inform you that I hope you'll tune in next time.